word about the insistence, and it gets more and more intense in the four Gospels, that John the Baptist is not the Messiah, because there were, and I understand there still exists, a small group in Palestine who believed that John was the Messiah. So at the time, this was written around the turn of the first century, a little later. John, the evangelist, whoever that is, or Johanna, as some people think, wanted to disabuse people that John the Baptist was not the Messiah. Okay. So I've been trying to suggest during Advent that we cultivate, or attempt to, because it's going to be the action of grace ultimately that accomplishes this, a conscious sense of absence. The absence of God in our lives. First Sunday of Advent, I said it's time to look at ourselves to see where are there God-free zones in us. And then last Sunday, I thought it was very important to point out there are God-free zones in the church as well. And all you have to do is know a little bit of the history of the church, past and present, to be able to identify those gaps. So today, I'd like to do something that I think is virtually undoable. I've been fretting over this all week, to talk about the God-free zones in our world. I spent days going over statistics about world hunger, world poverty, the wars, the racism, the sexism, the homophobia, the disease, the prevalence of illness, homelessness. The issue is so massive, I don't know how to get my head around. I strongly recommend, if anybody's looking for a Christmas gift, to buy that astonishing book, The Atlas of World Hunger. It's published by the University of Chicago Press. They just reduced the price from $51 to $46, but it's an eminently worthwhile investment. Large book. How do you begin to encompass the misery of the planet on which we live? As I said, I'm stymied. It is so massive, so overwhelming. The injustice of the world, I think, far more prevalent than the quest for justice. So, I'd like to go back to the great reading of the Feast of Christ the King, if you remember it, the end of the church year, and the great judgment scene in Matthew. And suggest to myself and to you that is what Matthew says there provides the absolute criteria for what we're supposed to be as followers of this man Jesus. The absolute criteria. There's no say, did you have the right dogmas? Did you sign the right confessional statement? Did you use the right translation? Did you sing the right music? Were you rubrically correct in your ceremony? None of that. None of that. Where we mislay so much of what the following of Jesus is about. None of that counts. According to Matthew, I was hungry. And you saw me hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty. I was in jail. And that's my favorite one, by the way. I was in jail. You know? Because what that does is put the skids to any kind of moral superiority that we'd like to convince ourselves of. I was a stranger, another favorite one, and you took me in. In other words, when our awareness of these people is absent, God is absent. It's as stark as that. Jesus identified with all of the left-outs of whatever kind in our society, in our world, in his world. That's where Jesus is to be found, primarily. I mean, we can talk about the sacraments, huh? The Eucharist, very important. Baptism, very important. Reading of the Scriptures, very important. But unless all these religious expressions conduce to making us more conscious of the violence, the oppression, the absence of peace in our world, again, we're back to what I suggested, using the word of a Presbyterian friend of mine, churchianity. We're not dealing with Christianity. We're dealing with some kind of institutional badge of honor. It's as simple and as terrifying as that. To the extent that all those categories of people, and that's not an exhaustive list, as we know. To the extent that we merely go through our lives unaware of the vastness of the inequity on this planet at this moment, we're missing God. We're basically God's missing in us. Just to conclude, then, with those terrifying statistics that Elizabeth Johnson has in that marvelous book, The Quest for the Living God, the top 20% of the human population on this planet at this moment own 85% of the world's wealth. The bottom 60% own only slightly more than 5% of the world's wealth. If you want to be terrified, if you want to be really frightened, think about that. But that's where the good news hits home.